This is the story of the one. As head of maintenance at a concert hall, he knows the show must always go on. That's why he works behind the scenes, ensuring every light is working, the HVAC is humming, and his facility shines. With Grainger's supplies and solutions for every challenge he faces, plus 24/7 customer support, his venue never misses a beat. Call quickgrainger.com or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.
Survivor Specialist Phil and Alexa are back with our Episode 3 Predictions and Power Rankings for Survivor Winners at War. And today we are joined by none other than Lex from Survivor. There he is. Lex Vandenberg from Survivor Africa. We've had him on once before, and it pretty much killed us to not reach out to you during Season 39 to ask you to come on for another podcast. But we wanted to keep the surprise that you were going to be doing the Amber retrospective that you did with us. So it killed us, but we're glad that we could finally have you on now to break down all things Winners at War. How's everything been?
Good. It's nice to be in this little virtual room with you guys. I mean, you're both lovely folks, and I'm glad you guys called me and asked me to do it. But yeah, everything with me is good. Can't complain.
That's awesome. Yeah, you were our most viewed out of all of those podcasts that we recorded.
Really? And
You were. And the fun part was you were about an hour longer than every other one we did.
Because I could not shut up.
I mean, I think everybody enjoyed the little walk down memory lane, though. I mean, it was so different. And yeah, we ended up with the most views on that one. I think it got the most downloads, too. So whatever you did, Lex, keep up the good work.
I feel like the stakes are high now. I either bring the magic tonight or I shit the bed and you guys don't invite me back.
We cut you. That's it. Yeah, this is the last time. So everybody take one last good look, because this is Lex and this is his last appearance on the Survivor Special.
So Lex, what are you thinking about the season so far? Talk to us.
I'm actually having a ton of fun watching it. I wasn't sure how it was all going to play out and if it was going to do well or not, because I don't think it's, you know, a mystery to anybody that, you know, Probst never wanted to do an all winners season. Mm-hmm. And part of that was he just didn't, I'm speculating, but I think a lot of it is he just didn't think he had, 20 really compelling players and characters and, you know, for the entertainment value and for the gameplay. And I'd have to say, he was dead wrong. Mm-hmm. It's been wildly entertaining. It's interesting to see. I think that the skill level out there is kind of all over the map. There's some people that are just sort of, you know, clowning their way through it. And then there are other people that are obviously, I mean, they as soon as their feet hit the beach, it was, you know, they were thinking and it was game on. I've always really wanted to see, a true kind of mix of old school and new school mm-hmm. survivors. Mm-hmm. For the longest time, that was if I could have just picked a single theme, you know, for a new theme idea, that to me would have been really interesting, especially if you literally take people, you know, Rob and Parvid, they don't completely count anymore because mm-hmm. they played both styles, so they're kind of a hybrid. But I think there's something really interesting, and it happened right away. You know, with some of these old school players that hadn't played since the old school, it immediately they started kind of, you know, forming their alliances based on that. And the style of play is super different. Mm-hmm. I think that, I think you guys might've mentioned, because I was watching one of maybe last week's podcast that you guys did, but you guys commented that I think maybe Phil, you mentioned that you thought old school players might have an advantage over new school. Like
I do. Yeah.
An old school player can learn a new school game, but new school players, not really.
Yeah.
And I think that, you know, I completely back that. I think it's true. It requires, you know, some pretty nimble and quick adapting for an old school player who's thrust into a new school game. But I think another thing that people don't often think about is so many of the new school players, especially the younger folks, they don't remember a world without mm-hmm. Survivor, right? Mm-hmm. And a lot of them were fans since they were kids, probably because their folks, you know, their parents watched. But I think that, you know, when you then find yourself in a game, even if you're a winner and you were a big character, you could just see them fanboying and fangirling out, which mm-hmm. is something that an old school player would never do.
No.
You know, there were some out there that were fans of the show. I mean, I didn't really watch much. My mom and my wife did before I went and did Africa. But these people, they have literally been watching their whole lives. So that kind of like the reverence that they feel for the game and for these other players, along with just this kind of like, it's this inability for them to control their fawning over meetings, you know, somebody from, you know, an iconic season that they watched when they were kids. It's just, it is a true advantage for an old schooler, because I'm sorry, but I see that as a massive vulnerability and weakness for these new schoolers that are super fans themselves.
Look at Ben this entire time. I mean, Ben can't speak to Boston Rob. And
he could barely look at him. He was like, the dude that can't look the hot girl in the eye because he's embarrassed. He's I feel all wiggly and giggly.
Yeah.
And I'll tell you what, I know exactly what Boston Rob's doing, and it's something I would have no guilt doing, and that would be to exploit the hell out of that, because that right there is like, it's a weapon that they don't have in their arsenal. They've handed me that weapon. Mm-hmm. I got to use it.
Yeah. And this goes, I mean, you said a lot there that I want to talk about, but you know, you said Jeff Probst said, we don't have 20 winners. I don't even think we have the 20 best winners that you could put. Like if we were doing a Dreamcast, this probably isn't the 20 best. And still there is not a dud out there. There's not one person where you sit there and go, I don't want to watch this. Even Ben, who right now seems like he's a little over his head right now, like in terms of playing with
the entertainment value.
It's great.
He's such a cute, dumb kid.
Yeah. He won, and I feel bad that like he won the way he did, because poor Ben is just getting crapped on by people for it. But he is what I would be if I was out there. He's just like, oh my God, all these people are way better than I am, and I'm so over my head.
Yeah.
And I'm messing up so much, but it's really fun to watch and it's really wholesome.
I'm really liking Ben. I love it, and I love, you know, he says he doesn't have much of a social game, but his social game, I think he's got a great little social game, because he's just being real, and he's a guy with heart, and you can't help but be endeared to him. And if I was out there playing, I'd be like, okay, now, I need to make sure that I don't tell you anything really secret, because you are absolutely the polar opposite of any kind of fault. But I'd glob onto him, because I'd feel like, okay, this is a genuine kid that I can hang out with, and you know, we can connect, and he'll make me feel a little bit of home, of, you know, that connection to a person, not just because somebody wants to ride my back to the end, but somebody that I could genuinely have a good time with. And so I think that in that regard, his social game is really good.
Yeah.
I think,
and he helped Denise find an idol. That's fantastic social game right there.
Super, super smart. And it was, you know, obviously it was really deliberate, but I thought it was, that showed kind of, you know, a smart side to Ben for sure.
And you do see that, like, Adam was very worried, oh no, Ben knows that we have this idol. And Adam's probably seen in his, oh God, like, now we're going to get blown up because Ben's going to go and tell somebody. But then again, even though Ben is over his head right now, Ben was over his head a lot in his season and was able to overcome it in order to win it. So he might actually have a good story when he gets to the end, a better story than some of these new school players, where it's, I came out there and I was terrified of all of you. And now he's sitting there at the end and it's like, I overcame that. I didn't open my mouth about idols. I made sure to be loyal to who I said I was going to be loyal to. And I bumbled my way through the opening of it, but here I am sitting here right now and I'm ready to go. And I think it's an interesting dynamic they have going on right now. But I know when we talked to you in the summer, you were saying that you weren't huge on all the twists, obviously. You like the old school type game. And I think what Boston Rob said in the first episode was, this is what the new school guys don't do. They don't have a conversation. And when I was talking about the old school versus new school thing, you can teach somebody how to go look for an idol. You can teach somebody how to win an immunity challenge, how to do all of that crazy, use this when it gets handed to you from somewhere else and whatever. But if you can't just look somebody in the eye and have a conversation, you can't teach that to somebody.
No, you really, really can't. And let's think about also a lot of these younger people. They are, you know, the technology generation. Mm-hmm. A lot of them, for a lot of younger people today, socializing is more about, you know, you do it through a device, your phone or your laptop via social media or Snapchat or texting, you know, even something as simple as a phone call, a voice-to-voice phone call for a lot of young people is just like, they just don't really, they prefer something less personal. Well, that ain't going to work for you on the beach. Mm-hmm. And, yeah. And, you know, back then, you know, back in the old days, it was essentially 90% social game. The game you won or lost based on how well you connected to other human beings, how well you connected to people. It wasn't a nice to have. It was the whole thing, right? Mm-hmm. The only other maybe 5 or 10% was challenges and winning reward or immunity. That's as fancy and you know, those were the only other tools that you had. There was a little bit of the survival part of it, which, you know, I think I put that under social as well. Because if you can help, you know, make people comfortable or feed them or whatnot, again, that goes, but again, it was a social experiment. It was 100% a game that was won and lost, because of people's social skills and how you connect to people. And, you know, and Richard Hatch likes to claim that he's, you know, there's this myth that he invented the alliance, which I'm sorry, I have to call horseshit on that.
Because, yeah.
You know what? Every day, all of us make alliances, mm-hmm. you know, whether it's when we're in high school or middle school or in the office, office politics, it's just called, you know, it's a simple social skill. Nobody invented anything, but you know, when you have to fight, you know, for a prize, whether that prize be, you know, you want the promotion in the office or you want to be popular in school, you leverage people.
Yeah.
You know, he didn't invent nothing when it comes to that.
It was just that he saw that was the way that this game needed to really be played early on. And
that's
and
elementary though.
Yeah, exactly. What's shocking though is now we see how far Survivor has come, and it's like it's we all see it. And if you were to show somebody who was born in 2005 who started with whatever season, 2007, 2008, and it's like, okay, now go watch season one of Survivor because they still haven't watched it up to this point, or go watch Africa with mm-hmm. Lex, Ethan, Big Tom, Kim Johnson. Let's go watch that one. There, it's like a culture shock. It's crazy because it's like, well, wait, that swap was a big deal. We're gonna have a swap in 2 episodes. What are you talking
right,
about?
Right, right, right. Yeah. I mean? Back then, I mean, it was the end of the world. We, you know, mm-hmm. we had absolutely no clue or inkling. Mm-hmm. That was, you know, arguably the first big twist.
Yeah,
you know?
It was. Yeah. I still think it's the best one they've ever done because it's the only one that didn't impact the game so much and was still able to be overcome. And now we're at a situation where there's fire tokens, Lex, and there's fire tokens and Edge of Extinction. And yes, I am loving the season. I know Alex is enjoying the season. And you said you were loving it. Before we get into the power rankings, what's your take on this Edge of Extinction fire tokens thing that's going on?
I mean, I kind of got to continue to toe the line. I hate it.
Yeah.
I mean, I hate it for a few reasons. Most importantly, I think it puts all of the power into the hands of production and gives them a license mm-hmm. to because you know when we sign our contracts, you know, yeah, there may have been some mention. I don't even know if they mentioned because I've not done New School, but I know that, you know, they did have clauses in our contracts that talked about if there's a tie, this is what happens, right? Mm-hmm. Back in Africa, it was, you know, previous votes counted against you and there would be tiebreaker quizzes and whatnot. But, you know, I'm sure that production and Probst don't have to provide they're not forced to provide any level of detail whatsoever on what these fire tokens will do, how it will change a game, which means at any given time, if you're a little bit, not paranoid, but if you tend to be somebody that has sometimes trust issues, especially with powerful, you know, money-making companies and organizations and whatnot. Well, to me, I see that. And I'm like, well, this is it's a super easy way for them to fix and favor or eliminate anybody. They, you know, they become then truly, you know, Probst and the producers can potentially become puppet masters. And they can, you know, it gives it, and I hate to, you know, I don't want to come in here and, you know, and piss in everyone's cornflakes. You know, there's a lot of people that love Survivor, and I mean, and I love Survivor, but I watch with a really a suspicious eye because I played it twice and I kind of know how things go. And oftentimes people don't really want, they don't want to see behind the wizard's curtain. Mm-hmm. They would rather just stay naive about it all and believe that it is 100%, you know, completely fair, like the Olympic Games or something. And that's just, that just ain't how it is. And stuff. And that's why I love old school, because it gives production much fewer tools and weapons to use against us, the players, to, you know, manipulate. Cause we all go out there to win. We all want, you know, and I know, you know, you take a look at me in a lineup of other players, I'm probably not going to be, you know, Jeff Probst and Mark Burnett's the guy that they want to win. You put me up next to Ethan, you know, good looking young dude, nice guy. I'm the guy they want me to go all the way because I'm going to provide, you know, nonstop, you know, entertainment and slitting throats, and I'm going to get massively competitive.
Yep.
But then they don't want me to be the one that you know gets the giant check.
Yeah.
Because you know,
as much of a family man as you are, and as they showcased you to be on the season, granted, they didn't, obviously nobody knows that Ethan's going to get sick and then overcome that and have this story. But the story of Ethan is like, I was the quiet young kid, and they keep showing him playing hacky sack in Africa in the village. You were in that village. Where were you? That's what's so crazy though. And like, they can keep going back to that. Now, if you come back, it's like, he was a family man. They'd probably show when your wife came out and all that, but it's not the exact same as what they can do with Ethan.
No,
like, just that flowing lock.
If I came back, there'd be a lot more of like the throat cutting stuff. And then of course heaping helpings of me totally blowing it, you know, under Rob. You know, the first time, you know, arguably the first time that Rob figured out that you know, figured out this sort of magic trick of his, which, you know, I'll tell you, on me, that trick would only work on me once. If I was ever out there playing with him again, it would never work on me again. But it's insane. It's nuts for me to watch him pulling this, you know, this Jedi stuff when to me he's so transparent. And everyone's seen him play over and over again. So they all know. And how is it that they're just like willingly just climbing right into his little trap?
We were just saying that earlier today. We are two episodes in and Rob and Parvati are still running the show.
Oh,
how is that happening?
I don't, it's there. It confounds and frustrates me to watch because, you know, these are winners and you would, you know, some of them sure have personalities that aren't really aggressive or alpha. I think the only people out there that I think could really beat Rob at his own special kind of game or technique, which to me is just, you know, I've been flattering him by calling it Jedi mind tricks and whatnot, but really when you get down to it, it's just old school bullying. That's all it is. It's the art of intimidation. There's nothing especially graceful or, you know, very magical about it. He's just an aggressive kind of bully that, you know, that when he finds a weakness in somebody, whether that weakness for me would be the loyalty I feel to a friend, that's how he got me. And boy, he got me, you know, and fair and square, he jacked me. But in other people, it's people that might, that don't like stress or don't like conflict, don't like, you know, somebody getting in their face. He leverages that real well as well, but it's just, all it is old school bullying. And it's just astonishing to me that, the people are just rolling over and that's one of the very first things that I would say to Ethan. Well, Ethan, what are you doing? You know what this guy does. And now, unless Ethan is doing something really clever and isn't sharing it with anybody, which could be because, you know, Ethan and I learned in the, back in Africa that you don't say anything in confessional to a producer that you don't want other people to eventually hear, you know? So maybe he's just kind of keeping all that to himself, and maybe he's, I hope that his plan is to ride Rob piggyback and then to just put a shiv in him, or, you know, stab him in the back.
I think that's got to be the plan.
I think that's got to. And I was saying this
ain't though. I am going to bitch slap my brother from Africa. I will let him have it.
And I said this though, right now with Rob and Parvati, everybody's obviously really worried about them. And Danny gets voted out last week, and that's a victory for the new schoolers. They got rid of an old schooler. They didn't get rid of Parvati or Rob, but they can still, now they have the advantage over Parvati and Rob. And I think Adam wants to make a move on them. We saw him kind of stand up to Boston Rob last week. Yeah. But I keep saying, you can be worried about Rob. You can be worried about Parvati. Ethan is the biggest threat of those old schoolers on that tribe to win the game, because he can sit there and he can say, isn't Rob the worst? And we saw him with Ben and Danny when he was having the conversation. It was like, he's close enough with Ben where he's saying, you do realize that he's a new school guy, right? And you can feel it, that maybe Ethan's just sitting there going, I'll just sit behind Parvati and Rob.
And here's the thing. Ethan does have a distinct advantage in this legendary figure that's partially been produced and created by Survivor the show. You know, he, when you get to know Ethan's like anybody else, he's got a lot of different, you know, he's a multidimensional human being. Like people constantly go on and on about how he's just the nicest guy in the world. There's, you know, he's also, there are sides of him that aren't nice as well. And like all of us, and, you know, and I respect him more for it. He's not just this one note, but he has become this kind of legendary, super nice dude. He's also got, you know, 2-time cancer survivor. Mm-hmm. Boy, if there's anybody I don't want sitting next to me, is this person that has, and especially with a jury of new schoolers who just, you know, probably kind of worship the ground he floats above.
Yep.
But, you know, Ethan has, he can be very, very sneaky and really, clever that way as well. And I'm hoping that that's what he's doing. I'm hoping it's not just Ethan, you know, be getting lost in the headlights because the new school game is, because he and I talked, you know, we talked about this, and he did say, you know, we used to talk a lot about what if we went back and played. And he says, I would be so scared of this new school game, the speed at which it goes, the fact that people are so, that loyalty is kind of a commodity that's been tossed into the trash heap. It's, you know, alliances are made to be made and broken sometimes within the same day. You know, they're totally disposable. Mm-hmm. And you know, if you look at how Ethan played both the games he was in, he does not play. And his game requires and relies on at least one other player that he can piggyback ride, who makes the hard decisions and who sticks their neck out, and serves as a meat shield. That is Ethan's game. That is his style of play. It was incredibly effective for him in Africa, in All-Stars, when, as you know, when he came to me and said, hey, I want you to again to take care of me. We're gonna, you know, he didn't put in those words, but that's exactly what he was asking for. You know, protect me, save me. You know, go out there and play your hardcore game, and you'll always have my vote. But I wasn't gonna have any of it.
Yeah,
right.
You know, I made no deal with him on All Stars. You know, that the deal that we had in Africa, it expired, you know, on day 39.
Yeah. And so let's jump over to the power rankings, because I definitely want to talk about all these players too as we start going through. But I love the point you make about Ethan, because I think that's the game he's playing, but he's playing, and I think he really is playing it up, because you know Ethan probably better than anybody. He's not dumb, but he's playing it up like, wow, he's doing the aw shucks thing. And I keep saying that. I'm so scared, and he's chasing after whoever running down the path. But I think he knows that his best bet right now, because I think also in Ethan, his memory is, Dan, when I did the Amazing Race, we went out first. When I played All Stars, I went out before the merge. I think his goal right now is get to the merge and see what he can really start to work. And I think he's slow playing it, but it's almost coming across as like, I don't know what's going on, guys. Let's just do this. And how can you not love that guy? Because everybody liked him anyway coming in. So how can you not like him anyway? So
that's right. That's right. And that's why it's they're all playing a really risky game in letting him hang around. Because if they let him get through to the merge, he'll eat their lunch.
Yeah. You know? Exactly.
I think so.
So there you go. Well, let's get into these power rankings. We're going to do 1 to 17. We're going to start off with who we think is the safest, work our way down to who we think is the least safe. I got to say, I think that's our longest intro we ever had, Lex. I mean, so I'm just saying. That's perfect. I mean, I loved it because it makes it a little bit easier than just being like, well, what are we going to do when we actually get to – we have a good sense of how you feel about this season. And that's what I like to know coming into this. So – why don't we let's put you on the spot right away and let's see who's your number one. Who's you got at the top?
This person next. Week?
Right now I think I've got Sophie as my number one.
Same.
Oh,
we all have
five. High five, everyone! Sophie's looking great.
Did you have Sophie too?
Yeah,
Phil.
Yeah,
get out. How often does that happen? That
never.
Three people, not often.
We are so smart.
I know.
Oh, yeah. She is looking so good right now.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. No, she is slick.
And it kills me because, again, like I always say, I'm just going to keep putting Michelle at number one. I put her at two instead. So I had to put Sophie at one, though, because I can't be too ridiculous with this Michelle love. Like I wasn't co-wrong. But Sophie is just so good right now. I mean, she got Kim to show her half an idol, to do all that. She's got Yule. She's over there, like, kind of rooting for Tony to fall off the ladder and get hurt, you know? She is playing this game so well, and nobody thinks she's a threat. Nobody. It's just, like, whatever, she's there.
Which is absurd, because, I mean, everyone that's ever that watched her play and win knows that she is formidable.
Yeah.
But she is keeping such a cool head. That's one of the reasons I gave her number one, is I think she right now has the coolest head out of everybody out there.
Yeah. And I think
nothing wrinkles her. Nothing phases her.
No, she is cool as a cucumber. And she, as we saw in her first season, she can play a different person than who she actually is. And that's how she won South Pacific. And on this one, we're seeing like, oh my gosh, Kim, thank you so much for showing me your idol. And then they get to the confessional and she's like, why would you do that? Why would you give it to the devil?
Right.
And so slick to your point.
Yeah. She has a you know, a quality that is, I think, critical in Survivor, but especially in a game that's ratcheted up to this level, you know, all winners. Mm-hmm. And that's confidence.
Yeah.
You can never undervalue, just the power that confidence has. It's why Rob can do what Rob does. That's confidence. You know, sometimes, you know, confidence could get you into trouble. It, you know, got me into trouble plenty of times because sometimes my confidence was a bit blind, but I managed most of the time to get myself out of a mess that maybe my confidence got me into, because confidence is power out there. Yeah. And she has a great form of confidence in that it's not too arrogant. It's just really calculating. Yeah. But she's comfortable, you know? She doesn't look like it. Most everyone else, which is one of the things that shocked me about this season, is people are visibly freaked out. A lot of them. Mm-hmm. They're paranoid. They're like, oh my God, what, you know? A lot of people are visibly kind of shaken. And that is a terrible look when you're out there.
Yeah.
It's the smell of blood. And, you know, it's a smell of weakness, and it puts it sets like people like play like me or like Rob or like Sophie. It sets us off. We want to kill when we smell that fear. You know, just want to kill.
I mean, look at what happened with Danny last week. I think that's exactly what happened.
Yeah.
That was tough. That was it. Like she completely just fell apart and everyone jumped on it.
Totally. Yeah.
And
she,
I think
she got herself. She hung herself with her own rope.
Yeah, she absolutely did. And I think when you go and you look at the confidence, I love that you're calling it confidence with Sophie, because I think also what her confidence allows for her is she's confident enough to put her ego aside. And I don't think some people are confident like that. I think some people, they're confident people, but they also need to be the center of attention. And she's confident enough to let Ewell take the reins again and let everybody kind of, Tony can make his ladder and do all the nonsense. But what's crazy with Sophie is she did this once and won the game because of it. And I remember now why I thought it was Bergie and not Berg. It's because Albert De Strade, which I found out the last time, but she plays with Albert and with Coach. And she lets them just ego, 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 and she beats them at the end. Yeah, and she has no problem sitting back and being like, sure, like, I'm going to do my thing. You're going to vote for me to win anyway, but I'm going to let you think you're in control of all of this. And it's amazing.
It's genius, and it's something you can't fake that. You either have that the ability to do that or you don't. And frankly, most Survivor players have a problem being able to just completely, you know, gate check their ego. It's you know, by definition, the kinds of people that want to go out and play a game for $1 million and be on TV typically, you know, we've all got egos of some sort or another.
So she
has such, it gives her such an edge.
Speaking of gate checking an ego, my number two is Tony, who has gate checked that ego and has channeled it into ladder building and shelter construction, and it is going really well for him. I think people crazily are not taking him seriously, and it's great.
And that's what he wanted. He came out there and he knew what he did wrong in Game Changers, and I think he's learned from it. I don't have him that high because he's still Tony, and I'm still waiting for him to explode.
he's gonna pop. I don't know when it's happening.
I get what you're saying, though. I mean, so far we have not seen the threatening Tony. We've seen the, I mean, like Alexa said in our recap last week, not only did he build the ladder, he got everybody else to carry the ladder for him.
Oh my God. Just so ridiculous. Really, really fun to watch, though.
It's unreal. So, I mean, I like Tony up there. I mean, I do like, I can't believe I'm saying this, but like, Tony is, I think, a late game boot on this season. I think he's going to make it far. And who would have thought that coming in? But I think his Game Changers game took the target off his back. And I think it made him a lot, made him realize a lot about himself and what he needed to change about himself. So,
yeah. And I'm really kind of with you on that, because I've got him as my number four.
Okay.
So he's right there at the top. And I think, I think his stock is worth a bit more because he and Sarah are really working together in with this Cops R Us alliance. And I think for me, a lot of the people that that I've ranked high are people that I think have recognized the value of a true and potentially deep alliance with somebody. So it's kind of an old school technique or strategy. And people, even the new schoolers here, they seem to be, you know, They took little time to find kind of each of their ride or die. And the ones that are still either floating or, you know, don't have really solid relationships, I think that they're the ones that, you know, they're not going to go deep. They're in trouble.
And as I sit here and I put Michelle at number two, as somebody who really has not built that tight relationship. Now,
was that your number two?
That's okay, my number.
So I have her like she's like number eight, and I think I was being generous.
Yeah, well, she was your preseason winner pick.
Yes, I love Michelle. I really, I expected her to come in really stronger, and I thought she was going to be more confident. But she's the one. She's losing her shit out there, and she doesn't seem to have made any really really solid deals with anybody. Mm-hmm. I think that's a problem, don't you think?
I think it's a problem. The conversation that kind of changed it for me, because in the first episode she had a rough start, she voted the wrong way, only won along with Jeremy, and then she has that confessional of like, I want to overcome this and like I need to be better and all that, and we got her flashback. And then last week, despite the fact that she didn't really do all that much, she sat down with Jeremy and Adam right before the vote, and it was like, who do you want to vote out? And that was so close to vote time. You could tell that it was getting there. And to me, that says a lot about her and Jeremy are still close, but Adam is coming to them and saying, hey, what should we do? Should it be Parv? Should it be Rob? Should it be Danny? And I think that that says she is in with these new school players. Mm-hmm. And the reason I have her so high right now is because despite being on the wrong side of the vote early, if you're going to vote out one of the new schoolers, let's say Rob and Ethan and Parvati are able to flip some of these new schoolers to vote somebody out, you're going to vote out Ben, you're going to vote out Adam, or you're going to gun for them. And I know Adam and Denise kind of have the half idol, but you're never, why would Michelle come out of your mouth there? Jeremy, yeah, of course, get rid of Jeremy. Yeah. He's a huge threat. Michelle's name is never going to come up because of what I think you just said. Like, she kind of seems like she's lost and losing it. And I think that's okay right now because you can overcome that as the game goes on when you don't have a huge target.
No, good point. You guys may not agree with, I don't know where you've got him placed, but my number two is Tyson.
Ooh. Yeah, I have him much lower. I do.
I have Tyson kind of in the middle because I think that the poker thing's done. I think that was a really smart move by Yule to just lead with that.
Yeah.
And it's clearly scared the pants off of Kim. And I think literally, because she didn't have pants in when she got that idol. But Tyson, I think, like, going back to people who are cool and can check their ego, he doesn't, like, I guess if you haven't watched him four times, you wouldn't realize that he can check his ego. But he knew when his name was popping up to go into survival mode rather than alpha mode. And I think he now knows he has to keep rolling with that for a little bit. So I'm not too nervous for Tyson. And also, I think that tribe is really good in challenges. I don't think
that tribe's going to lose. I think my bottom five people, I think four of those five are all from the blue tribe, because I think the blue tribe is in more trouble. My concern for Tyson, now tell me if you think I'm wrong here. My concern for Tyson is, other than Kim, he is the next target on that tribe, right?
I guess he would be, wouldn't he?
Yeah.
So that's what concerns me.
That's why I asked you guys, is it for just this next episode, or is it the long game? Because I was only thinking about this next episode, but I mean, God, everything can change. You know, two episodes from now, everything can be upended.
So. I mean, you watch those 10 minutes before, the 10 minutes in between the immunity challenge and tribal council, and it's just a disaster.
Yeah.
It's just Russian roulette. It's crazy.
Yeah. So who do you have at number three then, Lex? We know your number four is Tony. Who you got?
I've got Denise at number three.
I have Denise at number four. She's like, oh, right.
Yeah.
I think it's looking great.
Yep. Yep. They haven't shown us much. We haven't gotten to see very much of Denise, but all of it seems like just solid, again, kind of sober gameplay, similar to Sophie. She seems pretty unflappable, and she's keeping her stuff together.
And we've seen her make two mistakes. We've been told they're mistakes. Her walking away with Adam day one, and then her suggesting giving the idol to Parvati, and then Adam jumps down her throat.
Oh, that was absolutely wild, like absurd. I feel like maybe she had had just a tiny stroke right before she said Parvati's name, and she didn't really want to say that, but she had a little seizure or something.
Probably.
I want everybody to know who's only listening on iTunes or Spotify or whatever. Lex decided to take his first sip of water at that exact moment and could not put the bottle down fast enough when he remembered that Parvati moment. I mean, you almost spit the stuff out because it's insane. I mean, and even Adam's like, are you joking? Like, that cannot be serious. And what's funny to me, Lex, and this kind of goes back to how we were talking about like different caliber of winner. Denise is such a well-revered winner. Yeah. Everybody loves Denise, thinks like she's a great winner, won a difficult. Nobody really thinks the same way about Adam. But Adam's the one who sits down and says, no, you're not going to give that to Parvati.
I was really waiting. I looked at her face and I said, my God, the woman's serious. Because I was waiting for her to say, psych, just kidding. You know, no, what do you think? I'm stupid.
Oh, my God.
But that's what's been so good about her. She has made one severe blunder, or attempted to make one severe blunder, and then one, I guess, just like social blunder that is clearly common because it happens to someone every single premiere. Mm-hmm. But she's bouncing back and no one's really getting mad at her about it.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And so I think that says a lot about how, like, her character and how people perceive her, where she can kind of make these missteps and no one's saying, oh my God, we have to get rid of Denise now. It's really impressive.
Yeah, I think she found a great ally in Adam, because I think Adam is somebody who knows the game really well. She can sit down, she can talk to him about everything. He's not going to run over and spill his beans, because we saw Adam pretty much be the only one to stand up to Boston Rob and be like, why the hell are we doing this? And who do you think you are?
Yeah, bless him for doing that. I wish he had been, I wish he had stood up a bit more.
Agreed.
And just said, you know what? No, I'm not dumping my bag for you. because somebody needs to stand up to him.
Yeah.
You know, this is how, I mean, don't even get me started on
I think
that.
It's trickier with Adam though, because he does have the idol. If he didn't have an idol, I think he'd have been like, Rob, I'm not doing this. You can come over here. You can look through my bag, but no, I'm not doing this. But because he does have an idol and he's trying to hide that. But I do think what works in Denise and Adam's favor right now, because I do have Adam pretty high up too. What's working in their favor is that they do have the idol, and the two of them, even though they each have a half, if Denise finds out that Adam's name's coming up, she's going to give it to Adam, and Adam's going to give it to Denise, because they are that close this early that it's beneficial to them for this to happen.
Yeah,
so,
Fair enough.
I like her spot here, and I think she found a good ally in Adam. I have him a little bit lower, but yeah, man, thank God he stood up to Boston Rob. And a lot of people thought that was a dumb move. I don't think it is, because if you don't do that, Boston Rob is on the Redemption Island path.
And here's the thing. There is value in getting some form of Rob's respect. And that's the only way that Rob does not respect people that do his bidding. You know, the people that there's a reason why, and Parvati's guilty of this as well, you know, and has been in her seasons as well, but there's a reason why even when people have done things to help them, or have been loyal to them, they're still, when that person's not around, they're talking smack about them, or they're laughing at them. To me, that is the one thing that I find most kind of reprehensible, and just the thing that I hate the most about Rob on Survivor is how he thinks nothing about being really mean when it doesn't even serve his game. Mm-hmm. And you know, I'll never completely get over how he mistreated Big Tom in All Stars. And Tom was his lieutenant.
Mm-hmm.
And he just talked so much dirt about Tom, made fun of him, talked about how he was stupid, he was a redneck, made fun of his family, made fun of his son, Bo, all the stuff below the belt, you know? And I don't even remember, why was I even going down?
Because you were saying Adam had to stand up. Yeah.
And Adam is he's a guy right now who I think has won a little bit of Boston Rob's respect.
Yeah, and I think that's going to go a long way.
And that can go a long way. It can also make it easier for Adam if he decides he wants to take out Rob. It's going to make his job easier.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and I think that the vote of Danny was a vote to appease Rob and Parvati for now in case there's a swap.
Yeah,
but you still, now if you vote out Rob or Parvati, you don't piss anybody off. If you would have voted out Rob or Parvati there, you might have lost Ethan, you might have lost Danny, you might have lost. But voting out Danny, that's who everybody wanted. Now you can get rid of Rob or Parvati. I really think, and I can't believe I'm saying this, in an all-winner season for a winner like Adam, who's new school, he's a huge fan and everything, but I think he's running that tribe. And it looks like Rob and Parvati, but I think that's just what we're used to. I think Adam is pulling the strings there and making sure that even though he got votes at that first tribal, he's making sure that people are voting the way he wants. Yeah. And he's the one who decided, let's get rid of Danny, not Boston Rob or Parvati. Yeah. And I think he's thinking this through.
I agree. He's playing. I mean, he's playing, you know, and I'd say he's playing hard. It's behind the scenes, but you know, you've got other people there, like Ethan, for example. He's just sitting and waiting, you know, and doing what he does, which is, you know, kind of pick somebody and piggyback. Adam's not doing that. I mean, Adam's playing.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, so we've done up to four for Lex here. My number three, Alexa, because we both had Denise at four. My number three is Yule. I love where Yule's at in this game. I love that him and Tony have this little like fake fight over who's going to get the breadfruit. I love how like Yule has come out of his shell on social media all of a sudden.
He's been and now so great.
We're getting to see like all these things where it's like, well, I guess this confession was important because of the breadfruit and like all of these little things. I just think he's having a really good time with it. He feels like he's going deep in this game to me. I think people really like him. He put together a 6-person alliance in a very old school manner of like, sure, let's just talk and do it and then not worry about it. And I don't think he's worried about idols or things like that, because I think he's comfortable in the position he's in. And he's done this where really he could put himself in a position to split the votes and still get rid of Kim or Tyson or somebody who defects if he wants to get rid of Sandra or something. So I love the position that Yule is in this game. Mm-hmm. And I'm so happy he made the final cut to get onto this season.
Yeah, he's been the star of this. He's been, maybe because I just miss his season. I miss that era so much. I actually have Ethan at number three and I have Yule at number five. So all in the same area. I think just because we're talking about Ethan playing the piggyback game and taking a step back, and we're clearly seeing a relationship with him and Ben that isn't really being highlighted, but I think it's definitely, he's the only one who's kind of reaching across the aisle. We're not really seeing that with Rob. We're not really seeing that with Harvey. Mm-hmm. Ethan and Ben almost don't even need to have this super tight alliance. I think Ben just wants friends, right, and he's found that in Ethan. And so I think Ethan's threat level is going to come up after the merge. I think what he's doing right now is working for right now.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And so now I have Ethan much, much lower. Lex, you don't have to give away where, okay, but you do have him lower.
I've got him at number 12.
That's exact. I have him at 13, actually. So I have him down there.
Wow, all right, let's hear it. Let me hear this.
Well, I mean, for me, I'm not yet convinced that that he is being really clever. I feel like he's, and I worry that he seems pretty paranoid, and Ethan is a naturally incredibly paranoid person. He'll mm-hmm. be the first to admit that paranoia, even in regular life when he's not playing Survivor, he's paranoid. You know, that's just, it's a character trait. That I see that running a bit amok. I see him constantly, like, he does this thing where he chews his nails when he's, you know, paranoid and nervous, and it's a wonder he's got fingers left, because he's been just like, you know, attacking his hand. So I know these are tells, they're signs that I know to look for in him. So I feel like he's really nervous. And I was really hoping that I was going to see him go out there and kind of reinvent his game and do mm-hmm. things really differently. But I suspect what I see is him just going right back to the old playbook, mm-hmm. Which I just don't think is going to work really well mm-hmm. in this season. So yeah. I'm worried about him, and I'm hoping that I'm really hoping that there's a wake up call real soon. Something that's going to jar him in the right way, and he's going to go, okay, shit, I have got to shape up right now, and I've got to shake the dust off and approach this differently.
Cause I think he needs to get blindsided, but not him.
But not voted out.
Ben needs to get blindsided, or Parvati needs to get blindsided. I think that
my biggest concern for Ethan, and the reason I have him low, is what if they're scared that Parvati and Boston Rob are acting as confident as they are because of an idol. And I know Adam and Denise have an idol, but maybe they're concerned Amber's over on Exile Island or Edge of Extinction, whatever it is. We don't really know what's happening. We don't know what could possibly be coming in with fire tokens. Rob, they have to know, has two right now. There's no way he doesn't. Yeah. They don't know what they mean. But I worry that maybe they say, well, I'm scared of voting out Parv and Rob because they're being so arrogant. They're so confident. Maybe we should just get rid of Ethan. But right. I do think Ethan, though, is so well-liked on that tribe. I mean, we had the whole entire scene of him regurgitating rice in the secret scene, Lex. Did you see that? Was he regurgitating anything when you guys were on Africa or no?
He'd never done that before. That's I guess he does have a new trick.
Yeah, that's it. He reinvented himself. But I just think I think everybody likes him so much that he should be able to survive, but I'm not confident enough on a tribe that's losing and the alliance that's definitely the minority, surrounded by people who are more just confident than him and maybe can pull the wool over people's eyes a little bit easier. I worry that he could go.
And I worry also because the two people that he is closest to in the game, you know, Parvati and Rob, they are already, they've already been discerned as major threats. Mm-hmm. And if somebody does decide to get rid of one or both of them, then Ethan loses the people that he has made the long deal with. Mm-hmm. Right. And it's really hard. It's critical that you protect and make sure that your deep alliances don't get voted out early, because it's impossible to make, you know, you are always going to be, by definition, when you make a new alliance, if you need another number, 10 days, 12 days into the game, it will more likely than not, you will be low man on that totem pole. Yep. Mm-hmm. It will not be as close or as tight as the relationship that they've made with somebody else, and they've been telling secrets for 10 or 12 days. You will not be able to wedge yourself. It'll be very difficult to wedge yourself in between there. So it's imperative for Ethan's game, I think, that Parvati and Rob hang around.
Yeah.
And that's another reason I give him a low number, because I think once they go, I think he's in trouble.
Yeah, and I think what could help him is I know there's going to be a swap at some point on the season just because it's not the heroes versus villains thing, so they're not going to try to keep the original tribes. But I think when there is a swap, maybe getting on a tribe with a Tyson or a Kim or something like that, all of a sudden he's sitting there and it's like, well, these people didn't really have much to work with either. And now I can – even Wendell and Nick, who look like they're in an okay spot, they're not in a great spot. And I think those are people – Ethan and Wendell – there's no way those two guys aren't going to get along.
Oh, absolutely. Yeah. Those two will immediately gravitate towards each other.
Yeah. Sure. So I think if he can get a swap where he gets some of these outliers from the Red Tribe, he could be in an okay spot. He's got to survive this week and probably next week. Those are the big ones, especially this week. They probably, maybe they swap at 16, but my five. So Alexa, you had Yule at five. My five is actually Sarah Lucina. We haven't seen much from Sarah, but we have seen
Sarah's my five.
Lex and I pretty much have the same power rankings.
Sarah's my five. The only place where I didn't agree with you guys, I didn't go over, but I don't have much to say about it, is I have Yule at 10. So I put Yule kind of right about the middle, but Sarah's my five.
Sarah's looking great.
And I love what I'm seeing. Yeah.
Yeah. Like her getting back with Tony and then being able to bury that hatchet and just say, let's go, let's do this. It's what we saw Rob and Parvati do. It's what we've seen other players. And doing that, I think, is the most important thing on the season. I think that's becoming a trend. If you can bury the old hatchet, you're going to be fine. Yep. And for Tony and her to really get along and bring back Cops Are Us, which was brutal for Sarah the first time she played, how much it really like opened her eyes to that situation. I think she's in a great spot. She's having fun over on that tribe. She's kind of in that group of six. She's got a tight person in Tony. Yeah. I don't see any reason that they get rid of her anytime soon.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. So that's it for that. I've already kind of talked about my six, so I have Adam at six. I'll just throw that one out there.
I have Adam at six too.
Okay. So Lex and I were talking beforehand, clearly.
So, wow, that's some Twilight Zone stuff. That's,
I know. So right now, Lex and I, we both had Sophie at one. We both had Sarah at five. We both had Adam at six. We were off by one on Denise. Whoops. Yeah. We really missed that one.
Big miss, guys.
Big miss. But so what do you like about that? Because I talked about Adam a lot and how I feel about Adam's game here. What do you think about Adam?
I just think he's really shrewd and really smart. And again, I gave him definite extra brownie points for standing up against Rob. I thought that showed that he's if it's tough to intimidate you, that by definition that means you're strong.
Yeah.
And Rob's a tough. He's a tough one. You can see the people, all the other people, you know, kind of falling in line. Everyone had their bags upended within like moments, right? I give Adam mad points for that. And I just think that he's just making really smart moves and he's thinking way out. Mm-hmm. You know, I think you can just see the game he's playing is like, he's playing chess right now.
Yeah. And he had his back against the wall in that first episode and him and Denise go off and they walk together. And what we saw from Adam was he wasn't just going to roll over and be like, dang, this stinks. He went to every person.
Yes.
And talked to every person.
He did the right thing.
And now, he doesn't want to flip over his bag, but I doubt people are going back going, oh, Adam didn't want to do it. He's definitely got an idol. They're going back, and all he has to do is say, Boston Rob cannot do this, and there is no bigger fan out there than Adam, and that's just a fact. Yep. And he will be the one to say he's done this three times, and even when he played poorly, and that's the thing that people don't realize, even when Boston Rob didn't place well, he still played the same game he played in All-Stars and the same game he played in Redemption Island when he won. He found his group. They followed him. In Marquesas, he was just on the wrong side of the numbers. Yeah. And in Heroes versus Villains, Tyson wanted a hot dog. That is it. Otherwise, he played the exact same game. Fall in line and follow me. And it worked for him really well twice. And it's shaping up to be the same way. But Adam is just like, guys, we can't do this. Like, what are you doing? And I respect it so much. And I think it's cool, too, because he's somebody who could have went in nervous, wide-eyed, scared. Oh, my God, that's one of my idols. He's playing the game.
Totally.
But
doesn't care.
There is no person.
He wants that $2 million. It's he's hungry for it. And I think that the fact that he felt like he came close to being, you know, ejected on episode one.
Yep.
Shook him in a good way. I think it, you know, it's like sometimes you just need a back slap in the face just to wake you up. Yep. And now he's like, okay, woo, God, I dodged that bullet. But I think it helped. I think that near miss was actually gave him an advantage. It helped him. It you know, shook him up. It was like, you know, jumping into an ice cold, you know, an ice bath,
yeah.
And realizing, oh God, okay, this is real. And I've got to work.
And you were talking about confidence earlier with Sophie. Adam might not be revered necessarily in the Survivor community as a great winner, but there is no person out there who's more confident than Adam. Even though he's playing with his idols, Adam always felt that he was a part of the community before he even played the game. Right. He was confident enough to like really have this like, I love Survivor. I'm going to do this. I'm going to do that. He was so confident to just put his life out there and talk about his love of Survivor, and it eventually gets him on the show. He is so confident in himself. And to be able to go out there and just be like, yeah, you might have won, but like now – we're just part of the same game. You're no longer my hero or my idol. You're just another guy who I need to beat. We saw him do it to Jay in his own season. He has no problem doing it to Boston Rob, who he knows much less than he did Jay.
Right. Yeah. That's right.
So I want to say my number seven, but should I just say our number seven, Lex? Should I just say that?
But we'll see. Yeah.
Say it on three.
I would be surprised if we had the same on here. But maybe
I would be surprised too.
Because now we're getting to like the murky waters.
Yeah. So I mean, I've got my number seven's Wendell.
Okay.
Okay.
I was close with that, but I actually have Sandra. So we'll go back and forth here. But if you want to talk about Wendell hasn't had.
Okay. I got Sandra pretty
low. Reaction.
I've got Sandra low. I've got her down. I've got her way down. Yeah.
She's got an idol though.
I know. I feel know bad. That, I have no faith in her with the idol, even though I should.
But she has to play it, doesn't she? Doesn't she have to play it at this one?
No, so it's only the tribal councils that she attends.
Oh, so she actually has two to play it, huh?
Yes.
I misunderstood that. I thought she had to play it this week if she went, and that's why I had her so high.
Okay. I might be wrong, but that
I'm still going to keep her at seven, though, because she has an idol and she's the queen, and I think she knows how to play the game, and I don't think her tribe's going to lose. Ultimately, I think her tribe's going to end up winning.
That's great.
But yeah, I do have Sandra at number seven, mainly because of the idol and probably because I just misunderstood. But let's talk about Wendell, you know, like let's talk about Wendell because he's not somebody who's been talked about really all that much so far. So
he hasn't.
Lex,
I mean,
you have him.
Yeah. I mean, he hasn't. Well, I know Wendell. He is just a super, super nice guy.
Mm-hmm.
And I know that that, you know, again, it's I place so much kind of stock in the value of relationships out there that, you know, Wendell is a guy that I would probably immediately go to him. If we were on the same tribe, he would be one of my number one picks, you know, to make an alliance because he values, you know, some of the old school kind of, you know, qualities like loyalty and whatnot. He's a straight shooter.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that, I think that's going to be, those are tools that will be really useful for him in this game. So I think it's for him, it's relationships. We haven't seen very much of him. That's also one of the reasons I put him as pretty safe because I'm watching the edit.
Yeah. You can't help it. Right. I mean, when you've been around since season three, it's really hard to not watch the edit. And that's how I've been watching it so closely since I first started watching Australian Outback. I was, but 9 years old, but still like I've been watching it so closely as I go through that you can't help but be like, well, Wendell hasn't really done much. And somebody like him is going to get a little bit of screen time before he goes. He hasn't done anything to piss anybody off. He's on the stronger tribe. He's in kind of the bigger alliance. I am at 10, but really kind of how you felt about Yule, where it's like, I just kind of have him there. That's kind of how I feel about Wendell. I like Wendell. Yeah. I think Wendell's playing better, probably a better start to his game this time than it was in Ghost Island.
Yeah.
It's just right now he's being overpowered by a lot of really huge personalities, but he's put himself in a pretty good spot.
Yep. I agree 100%.
Yeah. My next like 5 to 6 people are all like, they're fine.
They're in the middle.
They're probably fine.
Yeah.
Who
did you have for 7?
My 7 is Nick Wilson. I think he's fine.
Okay, yeah. I've got him close. I've got him like at 9.
Yeah,
so.
Super quiet. I think the most quiet last week. I don't think he got a confessional last week.
I forgot that he was on.
Yeah,
exactly. So edit-wise, I think he's fine. But I think he's another one where he probably learned. I mean, it's hard to learn from a game when you won. But I think he knew that he had such a rough start to David versus Goliath that I think he learned from that. And so I think he took a big backseat, and I think that's really going to work out well for him.
Yeah.
I have him right around there. Who was your 6, Alexa? I missed your 6.
My 6 was Sarah.
Okay.
And then that. Just as we've been talking about him, Tyson is my number 8. which feels low, but I think Tyson is perfectly fine. The only reason I have him low is because I don't really know where he stands alliance-wise, but I'm really not nervous for him.
Yeah, and Michelle's my number eight. I just have her I have her safe and in the middle. So
yeah, I think that I mean this is kind of where I go through my people that I'm just like, all right, yeah, they're fine. Like I don't know
what's going on, but they're fine.
Yeah, like I have Tony at eight, like you all had him higher. I still think cuz he's Tony, I can't really put him higher than eight because I just until he changes his first name. I mean, the man is building a ladder. He could get medevac this week, you know. Like, I mean, I don't know what's going on. When, like, think about this though, Lex, like somebody builds your house and like, it starts to kind of shake and almost fall over. And you're like, I don't know if I want to go in there. And it's like, no, well, that's how it's supposed to be. Are you going to walk in that house? No, but that's what Tony did with his ladder.
Oh my God. I think you guys mentioned this on your podcast a few days ago that, you couldn't believe production let him climb it.
Yeah.
Which I was shocked. Cause I watched that and I'm like, okay, this has the potential of ending in like a paralysis or even death.
Yeah.
And if
he hits his head the wrong way. Oh.
I mean, is there, you know, when you're climbing a ladder and you're going, he must have gone, 15 feet?
Easily.
Maybe 20?
Can we say
if
this?
You land on your head.
You're dead.
I'm just going to assume that production didn't allow him to do it and he still just did it.
Well, I mean, and I know that, you know, we signed paperwork that basically says, you know, if you die because of anything, there's no legal recourse at all. They're not liable for anything. So it wouldn't be a legal thing, but it would just be a responsibility thing. Like, okay, this looks like it's so dodgy that there's about a 50-50 chance that serious injury or worse is going to happen.
He stepped on the first rung and it shattered. God.
So bad.
This goes back to who we all had at number one, which is Sophie. And while he's up there and everybody's like, Tony, come down. Tony, don't hurt yourself. Tony,
jump, Tony.
Sophie goes, hey, Tony, I think there's a breadfruit right over there. Like, she's trying to get him, like, reach a little bit further. See what happens.
You can do it.
I wouldn't even have had enough confidence to be the one holding the ladder when he was climbing because I don't want him to fall on me.
I don't want that responsibility.
And I'm somebody who, like, hates heights. And even though that's not really that high in the grand scheme of heights, I would have had to walk away because I would have been queasy and nauseous and just been like, I got to get out of here.
Like, that's a jump.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. Like, he would have been very badly hurt if he would have fallen off of that ladder. But hopefully they got rid of it. Hopefully somebody went and destroyed it. I'm sure that if word got back to, like, Jeff or any of the big higher-up producers, they're probably like, do not let him get on that ladder again. Do not let him. Like, we'll put it on TV, but get rid of that right now.
Yeah.
So, yeah, I had him at 8, and then I had Nick Wilson at 9 and Wendell at 10. Nick and Wendell.
Nick, 9.
There we go.
Another one.
I think that's our fourth that. Nice. And now we're starting to get to like the random spots, but maybe your reasoning is the same as mine here, Lex. He wasn't really there last week. He was there the first week, gave a pretty good confessional. Why are they going to get rid of him? Like, what's the point?
That's right. Yep. Yeah. Yep.
Mm-hmm. So Alexa, catch on up.
Number 9 for me is Adam. I only have Adam in the middle because I do think it was a good move, but I think he's at the point where he's either earned Boston Rob's respect and he's Boston Rob's going to gun for him out of the like respect for him, or he's annoyed with him. Mm-hmm. Yep. Or on the flip side, now that there's 3 old schoolers versus 4 new schoolers, 5. So that old school group is small. Yep. So Adam can then just lead the charge against them. So I don't know which way it's going to go. So that's why I have Adam smack dab in the middle, but I think he's going to be fine. And then I have Ben at number 10. I think everyone is viewing Ben as a hot mess, and he is a hot mess, but he's not threatening at the moment. He's like crazy, but people don't really trust him, but people aren't trying to get rid of him. It's really weird.
Yeah. You know, I mean, I've enjoyed watching Ben so much, and I get really angry and sad when I see people crucifying him on, you know, all the trolls online, you know, on social media, who feel like for some reason they feel like he didn't deserve to win or whatnot. Mm-hmm. I mean, I understand the method was, you know, wasn't kind of your standard issue stuff, but you know, Ben won. It's just,
he won.
And I don't think that he made the most out of what he had.
Yeah.
And for that, he deserved to win. You know,
yeah.
But I have Ben at 15. I have him almost last. And the reason for that is I if I was out there, I wouldn't mind being his friend, but I would go out of my way to make sure that I wasn't playing with him and that nobody in my alliance is playing with him, because he is such a liability. He shoots his mouth off. He gets giddy around people like Boston Rob. Mm-hmm. He is the guy that you could spend, you know, days, if not weeks, working on your strategy with your one or two core alliance people. And then, you know, the day comes where you need a number and one of your people thinks that Ben would be good to bring in, and he could literally destroy your house mm-hmm. of cards with one screw up.
Yeah.
Where right. he just blurts something out. He's like, oh no. Oh, did I say that? He's to me, it's way too risky. He's like nitroglycerin.
Yep.
And that was fantastic. But what a reference. I guess it's so interesting because going into this, I was like, oh, Adam's going to be the giddy one, or Nick Wilson will be the giddy one. Because Ben, I think one of the coolest episodes I've watched in recent seasons is the double episode in Heroes, Healers, Hustlers, where Ben acts as a double agent. He is so good there. Mm-hmm. So it's really crazy to see. And I know people don't remember him for his shining social game, but it's so weird seeing this 180. It's really weird. And I get why they're nervous.
And I agree more with you, Lex, than I do with Alexa. I have been at 14. I was going to put him at 15, but I figured I have to put somebody.
This is wild.
Somebody from the red tribe below him. I didn't want my bottom three people to all be from that blue tribe. What I worry with Ben is the only people who would look out for he's got his new schoolers who might look out for him, but those new schoolers are Adam and Denise, who are terrified that he's going to open his mouth about the idol. Yeah. And Adam doesn't want Ben to be able to say anything right now. Only Adam and Denise know. So if Adam can have his way, and maybe he can't get rid of Parvati, can't get rid of Boston Rob, maybe there's something that comes up, but everybody can get behind voting out Ben, I think Adam would do it. And I think the old schoolers would get behind it. I think the new schoolers, because then he's gone. And with Edge of Extinction there, that obviously puts a loophole in there. But you get rid of the person who can just start walking around camp going, well, Adam and Denise have an idol. Adam and Denise have an idol. That's huge.
The person that can either on purpose or more likely than not accidentally set your entire plan on fire, like just literally turn your game into hot garbage, that person's got to go. And I'd see him and I'd be like, oh, I really like hanging out with you, but God, I'm scared having you within earshot of anything that I'm talking about, because it would probably not be on purpose because Ben's just this sweet guy, but
but you can't have that. I mean, cause that could blow up your game big time. And we'll talk, I still want to talk to you about, you know, the fact that Edge of Extinction, they're actually having a bigger impact on this season this time. We'll get there in a little bit later when we actually get to Boston Rob. But for right now, like if you're Adam, I'd rather have him over on Edge of Extinction telling the people who are voted out that Adam has an idol than still be in the game telling everybody that Adam has an idol, because it right now, Adam and Denise have the element of surprise. They emptied their bags. Denise did the great thing with her hand, hid the idol herself. But man, if anything gets out, all of a sudden there goes your surprise. And then they can just split the votes.
The moment Parvati and Rob know that if they find out, it's game over. Yeah. It's over.
All right. So my number 11, I have Jeremy at 11. Lex is looking at his paper. We're going to react. He's got it.
Jeremy at 11.
I mean, I don't know
here. Can you see?
Yeah, that's right.
That's right. That's right. I mean, maybe like Lex and I are watching the same season and everybody else is watching something different. Because Alexa, yours is somewhat similar, but like Lex and I are like, it's like we've watched every episode together and then had an hour long conversation afterwards. I don't like where they are. I like where they are. I mean, okay. So my reason for Jeremy: had a bad first episode, loses his closest ally for really no fault of his own, really only because he was on the same season as them. Originally, people didn't like that. He gets blindsided, but then he gets all of a sudden this token, and then he gets an advantage this week. And now he's got a couple things. He's got this power thing. What is it? Safety without power. I don't know if he'll ever end up even using that this season unless he 100% knows he's going home one week. But that's not going to happen soon. His Tribal Council performance last week was like, if you're going to go on Survivor, study that Tribal Council performance. And I know you only got to see 3 minutes of it, but the way everybody starts blowing up at each other, dumping their bags, all the craziness gone,
he just
sits there with his jaw as tight as it can possibly be and does not open his mouth the entire time because everybody's looking at everybody else except for him. And I just thought it was absolutely perfect.
It was amazing.
Yeah. And that's so hard to do. It is so hard to do out there.
Yeah.
When, you know, when tempers flare up and you're, you know, you're already exhausted. And just there's a feeling of, you know, when you go to tribal council, it's not just because someone's getting voted out, but the whole production is so intense. Mm-hmm. I mean, there's like, you know, there's a crew of, I don't know, 100 or more people, you know, there's cameras. You're surrounded by cameras everywhere. The whole thing is like, it is an intense, it's like being in a, you know, a pot of just boiling, you know, boiling oil.
Yeah.
And for him to watch him just stay there, just kind of just, you know, claptrap, just keeping his mouth shut. It was, nobody else was able to pull it off.
No. I think he learned from Natalie and Sam Wandel Sir, because after Jeremy went home, that's when Natalie was like, I have to completely reevaluate my game. And this time he just got lucky that it wasn't him first and that they decided to vote on Natalie, which I thought was kind of crazy. I'd probably go Jeremy first because Jeremy's such a threat to win the game. But man, the way he just sat there and was just like, nah, I'm not going to say anything. Like, you could see it in his mind. He wanted to speak, but he's just not going to fall for the trap.
But he knew it was, he knew that every time you open your mouth, it's almost a guarantee it's going to get you in trouble.
Yep. Absolutely.
And you also, anytime you open your mouth, you give Probst a little bit more information that he will immediately turn back around on you and cut you with it. You know, he'll say, oh, really about that? Now let's follow up question. You know, he's good at that. But, you know, games have been won and lost based on, you know, an exchange that a player had with Probst at Tribal Council.
Yeah. Courtney H was a big advocate for that. She would always be like, Jeff, why are you singling me out right now? Like, what did I do to you?
Yeah,
and I think that it's very telling, because if you start telling the rest of the tribe, you don't do anything, why are you here? It's like, well, Jeff, why are you letting them know that I'm not doing anything and I'm sitting here? I'm doing that on purpose.
No, the number of times, you know, he put me in the hot seat, you know, telling everybody, you know, that I was running the show, or I was, you know, I was making all these, you know, bold moves. I'm like, can you just shut your mouth?
Yeah.
You know, nobody needs to hear this.
Yeah. If they can't see it, that's their fault. Like,
right.
And that's how I kind of feel about this. And I feel like Jeremy, he took all of it out. He got the back corner seat. He sat there and he just hunched over and didn't say a word. And when Boston Rob said, dump your bag, he was like, boop, there it is. I'm done. And like, I like that he did that when that happened, because he's not in a position to really like stand up to Boston Rob. I think he will. I think this is his kind of way of standing up for himself here. Like, he's not in the position to say anything, and he has to just be like, sure, the last time we came to tribal, I got blindsided. I got to make sure it doesn't happen again.
Right. Yep.
So I thought he did well there. Mm-hmm. Alexa, who is,
who's your number 11?
I'm going to jump ahead, 'cause we've kind of covered everybody. Jeremy is my number 11.
Ooh, we all have.
All three of us.
I know. I didn't want to take it away from you guys. You guys were so excited.
No, it's even better when it's trifecta.
Yeah, right, exactly.
Jeremy, number 11. I think the safety without power thing is odd, and it could very well put you in a bad position.
Totally agree.
I think Jeremy's the right person to have it because of everything you guys just said. If Jeremy's like going to tribal council, there's like a drag race going outside of my apartment right now. If Jeremy is like, Jeremy is quiet, so if he just says absolutely nothing and then walks out of tribal council, that's perfect. But if he walks in and he's like, Rob, you're being ridiculous, Denise has an idol, this, this, and that, and then ditches, everyone would hate him.
Yeah.
So I think you have to play that really carefully, and I think he will. And then my 12 is Wendell. I don't really know what to do with him. There isn't a lot going on. I think he's in this giant majority, but we really don't know much. And then 13, only because we've talked about her a lot, is Michelle. Because right now you need a best friend, and I don't know who her best friend is.
Yeah. I've got Sandra on 13, and I'm kind of bummed about that, because I love watching her play, and part of me would love to see, even though, I mean, this might not be a super popular opinion, but part of me really would love to see her be the only three-time winner.
Oh, yeah. No, I think that's a very popular
chance that anybody can ever catch up.
No.
It would be like you would watch like 19 other people's dreams shattering. You'd hear the sound of shattering glass.
Yeah.
There'd be something kind of really delicious about that.
Yes, I completely agree. I think Sandra's in an okay spot. Alexa, you're just wrong about Michelle. Sorry.
Phil. Phil's got the little hearts pop above your head every time she comes on screen.
Yeah, you know that emoji with the heart eyes?
I always sit there and I'm like, it needs to be like a couple seconds longer. We need her to have a confessional here. We need something. And I feel like everybody who listens to our podcast, whenever Michelle even so much as shows up on screen, they're like, oh, I wonder how Phil's doing right now. Because, I mean, I really do. I mean, I think Michelle's great. I think she's super underrated. I still think she's going very far this season. I know, Alexa, you just put her at 13, but
I think she's going deep too. I mean, and she was my pick. I think, like you said, she was my pick before, you know, to win before we even started watching this season. But, I had her at number eight. So I had her kind of dead middle. Because I think she's got a lot of skills.
Yeah, I think she's got a lot. Yeah. So I don't know. I think she'll be okay.
It's nothing personal.
Yeah.
But and I feel like this is personal for you.
It is personal. I mean, I'm not happy about it, but I know that my number 12 isn't somebody. Me and Lex don't have the same hair. I have Tyson. This is where I finally put Tyson in. I still think his tribe wins. That's the second lowest I have somebody on that tribe.
Wow. Yeah. And I've got Ethan on 12. So.
Yeah. So yeah, and then I had Ethan at 13 and Ben at 14. So I've covered those.
So we're close on Ethan, and you had who at 14?
Ben. So we're close on.
Oh,
Ben.
Okay. And I had Ben at 15. I have Kim at 14.
Yeah. See, I switched Kim and Ben. So I originally had Kim at 15 or 14 and Ben at 15, but I switched them just because my bottom three was all going to be from the same tribe. And I just don't like having that just in case something crazy happens and the red tribe does lose.
Yeah.
So I actually flipped them at the last second. Otherwise we would have just been sitting here just being like, "Ooh, we did it again."
Unbelievable. But it's close. We're still close. Really close.
We're still close. And I just don't like Kim's position right now. I think her going and telling Sophie, right? So she tells Sophie, and then it's just like, okay, Sophie turns around and kind of craps on her immediately after.
Yeah.
That's not boding well for Kim. And like, can Kim turn it around? Maybe, but we just saw what happened to Danny when she felt her bag was against the wall. Maybe Kim continues to panic, and if they lose, I just don't see anybody else on that tribe going home other than Kim.
Yeah, and again, you know, the thing that some other players have done such a brilliant job of doing, which is keeping their cool, like, you know, Sophie, Kim is losing. She's just losing it.
Yeah.
You can see the panic and the fear and, oh my God, this is like, you know, this is it's the winter season. It's $2 million. I mean, she's just allowing herself to get completely flapped by anything that happens. Mm-hmm. And I think, and that's, you know, that represents the strength and value of confidence. That's the other side of the coin right there.
Yeah.
You know, when you're constantly freaking out and you just cannot just get your cool back. Mm-hmm. It's the smell of impending death.
Yeah. Exactly. And
Kim's idol means nothing because Sophie has it.
Right. Right. Sophie, the only person that's going to possibly get to use that is Sophie.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Exactly. No. There's no way Sophie's giving that other half back. There's just no way.
No.
There's no way.
Yeah. But she'll certainly talk Kim into giving her half.
Yeah.
If she really needs it.
Because Kim needs a friend.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. My 14 and 15 and my bottom two for the red tribe are the two people with idols. I have Sandra at 14 and I have Kim at 15, and they're the two with idols. And I never have people with idols down on the bottom.
Oh, but, well, you and I are super close there too, because Sandra was my 13 and Kim's my 14. So
yeah, pretty much the same thing.
So you got, and we're all going to have the same bottom two. That's what I just learned. So we all have the same two people left. Ended it the same way we began.
Yeah, but it's so funny just having an idol now. I remember when I joined this podcast with Phil, we would always just whenever someone had an idol, they were one, two, or three. And now, like these expiration date idols, they make you kind of jumpy. These half idols, and I'm loving this. Like I so prefer these kind of idols because
yeah,
you can't just hang on to it.
Yeah. I do too.
So yeah. Many people get voted out with idols in their pockets now, and it's not even like, how could you do that? You're so dumb. It's just so common now.
It's part of the game now. Yeah. Yeah. Now everybody's preparing for them, and that's just really all you can do. Do we have them in the same order?
That's the question. We may not. I mean,
I knew this podcast and I knew like who we were doing it with. And there was only one person I could put in spot 17 because I'm doing this with Lex.
All right. Then I'm lined up.
Yeah. Lex, are you in agreement here? Who do you got at 16?
Parvati.
Yeah, there we go. We all have
good ending.
And we all have Boston Rob at number 7. There was no way, even if Boston Rob had 6 idols and we saw him with the immunity necklace around his neck coming in, I was still gonna put him in the last spot when I'm doing the power rankings and predictions episode with Lex. Are you kidding me? You can't not do that. but we both are agreement. Like, even though everybody's saying Parvati and Boston Rob are running the show, what is it that just all of us are saying, no, they're the bottom two. One of them is going home this week.
Why?
Yeah, why?
Well, I mean, A is the obvious that everyone knows that they're like two of the best players and the most threatening players. They've also come out really, they've started really hot. Mm-hmm. And the reason that I have Rob at 17 and Parvati Blur is that Parvati at least still manages to, she's hiding just a little bit behind Rob. She's letting him be the one to say, dump your bags. You know, mm-hmm. She's getting a little less blood on her hands.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And he's the one that's being, he is essentially the voice and face, like the godfather. Mm-hmm. So I just see him at much, much greater risk. If I was going to want to take anybody out, I'd want to take him out. And if I was out there, if I was one of the other winners, you know, it's the equivalent of like big game hunting. I want that. I want his head on my wall. I want to be the one that took him out. So that's another reason that, you know, Parvati to the same, you know, also would be a great prize to hang on your wall. But Rob is kind of the one that I think everyone would really enjoy.
Right.
You know, being able to say, I took him out.
Yeah.
So that puts him at more risk in my mind.
Now, so I agree. I think Parvati is doing a little bit of a better job hiding behind Boston Rob. I think that Parvati is going to make whatever swap is probably on the horizon here. However, with Boston Rob, do we worry? And I've been waiting all night to ask this. Do we worry, especially from the preview, that Amber's going to find something and just gift it to Boston Rob and it's going to save him time in the game? I've been waiting all night to ask Lex that.
It'll kill me because it'll be impossible for me and probably many other people watching not to go, I wonder.
How'd that happen?
Yeah, that's quite a coincidence, you know?
You wanted to say coinky dink. I know
coinky dink. I did. I'll be pretty bent if that's what happens. Because it's going to be impossible for me not to wonder if, you know, producers just said, hey, this is really what we want to do. And like I said, I mean, a lot of these fire tokens and everything, it is a really convenient way, an easy way for them to make sure that, that maybe if one of the stars is in danger of going way too early, that you can bring that star back.
Yeah.
I mean, it's naive to think that they wouldn't, because it's there's no breach of law. Mm-hmm. You know, Survivor's not, it's not a game show. It's a reality, mm-hmm. Competitive reality drama. Mm-hmm. And so all of those rules and regulations that like Jeopardy and, you know, Wheel of Fortune, none of that stuff applies to Survivor. And again, I don't like to talk about it too much because it really, you can see people get really bummed out I'm so sorry, but no, you know, one of the other reasons that I had Rob at 17 is that, I can see, you could see that he was visibly kind of shaken, about Amber going so early. He was bummed. And that I think, it showed a weakness, you know, it showed a little bit of weakness. And this, that is precisely the kind of thing that will cause him to maybe lose his temper, piss somebody off, and put himself, you know, square in the crosshairs.
Now I know we were just talking about that, and I've mentioned this on other podcasts. My dad literally calls me after the first two episodes so far. They're rigging this for Rob. They're rigging this for Rob. They're rigging this for Rob. Like, that's all I'm hearing, right? And so, of course, that's going to happen because he thought Redemption Island was rigged for Rob. And my dad is clearly not a Rob fan, but I think that there's a lot of people out there. If you're not a Rob fan, you feel like it is rigged for Rob. Now, my question to you is, though, do you actually think if production, let's say, were to have any sort of interference here, anything, and this is all hypothetical.
Totally.
Would they rather have Boston Rob continue to kind of do this redemptive arc, I'm going to win it for Amber, or would they kind of get a lot out of Boston Rob and Amber both being on edge of extinction together and then having to compete against each other to get back into the game and be out there like starving together? They're both millionaires. They're out here on this island. Like, what do you think?
I mean, I just don't think that there's much payoff on that one. On, you know, you get to see that the one time they have to compete against each other. We've already seen them compete against each other in the first episode in the challenges.
Yeah.
It was boring.
You didn't cry?
No. Any producer worth his metal knows that where Rob brings the most value is in the game, intimidating people, strategizing, playing this role of the godfather. That's all the stuff that they love about him as a survivor, as a player and a competitor. Mm-hmm. That's the good stuff. On Edge of Extinction, he's just, you know, it's like watching a sad, it would just be a sad, like, you know, when you go by those truck stops and they've got like a tiger in a cage at a truck stop. And this beast that, you know, used to be, you know, majestic out in the wild. It's just pathetic. Mm-hmm. You know, it's just sitting there languishing and rotting. Yeah. And Rob on Edge of Extinction would be like, no, you know.
Yeah, that's – well, first of all, I've never seen a tiger in a cage on the side of a highway. I clearly don't live in California.
Lex lives up there.
I saw a tiger in a cage at a truck stop, but it's out in – if I recall correctly, it's either Baton Rouge, Louisiana, or Houston.
Okay.
Can Russell Hance give us the answer to this? He's in our chat right now. Russell, Where's the tiger in the cage?
It's got to be LSU, right? It's called the Tiger Truck Stop. Now, when I saw this was like 30 years ago. My band was on tour. We were on a coast to coast tour, and we'd stop at truck stops. And this one truck stop kept having all these billboard signs that said, "Hey, Tiger Truck Stop, real tiger in a cage." It was the saddest.
Oh, thing. I hate that.
It was the saddest thing I've ever seen.
Oh,
yeah, and it has to be for LSU because LSU is the Tiger. So I could see it being something like that.
Is it? But I didn't even know that. Yeah.
Well, that's probably that. Also why, like, 30 years ago, maybe they could get away with doing something like that. But I'm pretty sure now, like,
probably not.
Yeah, I don't think. I think whatever truck stop you were going by, now there's a stuffed animal tiger in there. I don't think we have.
I just got down a weird hole.
So now Alexa is completely sidetracked.
Yeah, now I'm on like PETA websites. It's not good.
Oh, no.
So I agree with you because let's say he gets voted out. We get the dual confessional, which we haven't had in like 1,000 years, of him and Amber. Okay, we're sad. We're here together. And then that's it. Because I don't want to go to Edge of Extinction every single week and hear about how their kids are doing.
Okay, so that's the other thing. If I guarantee you, if they're both out there on Edge of Extinction, we're going to see way more of Edge of Extinction than we ever want to. Mm-hmm. And it's a sad, boring place.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Even when Natalie and Amber are doing their thing last week, I had no interest in it.
They could just tell, you know, somebody just tell me what happened. Tell me about it.
Yeah.
You know, I don't need to see it. It's boring.
And I don't think we're ever going to see it again. And on a future season, it looks like there was that article that came out where it really was being shut down, thankfully. But But they need to kind of do away with it, because even we were talking about it, they had that water well clue and all of that. And Lex, you know damn well that back in Africa or one of the older school seasons, if they give you a clue like that, where you have to figure out that it's the first letters of every sentence that goes straight down and that's it, you're not finding the advantage in there unless you figure out that clue.
Totally. And you can ask, you know, she's not here right now. She's in our bedroom, but you ask my wife, she'll vouch for me that the moment they put that clue up on the screen, I immediately read Waterwell. I don't know if you guys did.
So great. No, I had no idea.
I did not. You know,
and then Kelly's all, my wife Kelly's all, really, you think? And then they lit it up. And yeah. I'm all, yeah, but that's, you know, that's kind of an old school thing.
Yeah. They actually used to use riddles and stuff. And now Natalie didn't even figure it out. And she still goes over to the water well, which you're going to drink water throughout the day. And it's just there. And they wanted that in somebody's hands. And yet it ends up in the good hands of Jeremy. And I like Jeremy.
You know what? But Stevie Wonder would have found it.
He would have. It's so crazy. It's so true, though. And it frustrates me when things like that happen, because that's starting to pull too much away from the game and actual skill and deciphering and all of that. So that's just my opinion on that. I do think, though, personally, and you had the Amber retrospective, you had the Amber tell all when you came on here and we discussed her, but I do think that out of all the old school players, I think Amber really is the most who's in a little too deep. And I think that for her, even though she's on edge of extinction, she could help Rob. I just don't think she's going to be able to figure anything out in order to help Rob. I just think it's just too much.
Well, and I feel like I was not at all surprised to see her go episode one. I don't even remember what I.
You had her at sixth place.
Okay. But I mean, seeing what she brought no game to this season.
Yeah.
She brought no game, not social, not, she brought nothing. She really brought nothing.
Yeah.
Yeah. And when they were between her and I guess it was her and Kim, I remember they said like, oh, Amber's like over there. Kim was like, Kim looked like patient zero because no one wanted to touch her, but at least she was wheeling and dealing or trying to.
Yeah.
Amber, it didn't seem like she was.
Nope.
Yeah. And so now Lex, the last thing I want to bring up here, you had picked Michelle to win. You had put Amber as your sixth placer because you had said that, you know, Rob would go out early, and it just ended up being the other way. Everybody was, whoever 19th place was going to be Rob or it was going to be Amber. Like, that's just how I felt the entire time when this cast was announced, because we've seen swaps at 18 so many times. But then you also said if you weren't going to pick Michelle, you wanted to do another final three that was allowed to include Ethan, because we had said, like, you know, like, what do you feel about all this? And so you did a final three of Wendell, Nick, and Ethan.
Okay.
How are you feeling about that now?
I think that could still, I think it's really super realistic as a possibility. Mm-hmm. I think that, you know, Ethan, like we said, Ethan will, if he plays his cards right, he will outlast Parvati and Rob, but he's going to need somebody. And Nick and Wendell are precisely the kinds of people that that he would probably naturally gravitate towards. Mm-hmm. And I don't think either of them right now have real super solid ride or dies, right?
Mm-hmm. No,
you're right. Which would make a swap at this point possibly perfect if he ends up, you know, with one or both of them.
Mm-hmm.
And I'd argue that with a final three of the three of them, I give Ethan
the edge,
great odds of winning.
We are seeing so much good of Ethan, and so much of that, like, everybody's just laughing and loves being around him, and he's just kind of, we're seeing more of that than we are from Nick or from Wendell, and I think that's very telling of who could end up winning the season. So yeah, I like that. I guess we have one other game that we do here where we do a eliminator game, which the way this works is pretty much every week when a new survivor comes on, we don't let you guys really strategize. It's just like, you got to pick somebody. And the way we do it is it's kind of like a football eliminator game where you can only pick the team once, you know, like, so if you pick the Patriots week one, you can't pick them again.
Okay.
So the way that this works is you will pick one person that you don't think is going to go home, and the entire survivor team, all the survivors are going to come after you and come on this podcast. If you were to get it wrong, they won't get to pick the rest of the season because they'll be eliminated. So you want to pick somebody though, that's going to go home relatively soon, not who's going to win, because as the people start getting voted out, the numbers of people that you can actually pick from dwindles. So it's very confusing. It just throws people for a loop.
It is a little bit confusing.
It's absolutely confusing. It's great because Alexa and I have been doing it for so long. And there was one season where we actually let the people, was it Alexa? Was it the people who donated to our Kickstarter or something like that? We had said, you can participate in the Eliminator game with us. And people actually were able to figure it out then, and you could strategize. The only person you cannot pick is Nick Wilson. You can pick anybody else. So who's not going to go home this week? You can't pick somebody in Edge of Extinction. Who's not going to go home this week? And who do you want to like? So you're going to take them for this Eliminator.
Okay, I am going to pick, I'm looking at my little list over here. Sorry, guys.
No, it's fine.
Good. I'm going to say Kim.
Kim, okay.
I was thinking about Kim. That's a good choice.
I'm just going to say this out loud now so that Lex and I can be on the same page. I have Kim also. So come let's on. Just end it on the same note we were always going to do. Alexa, I'm not changing it up. I had Kim. Like, I'm not
really.
I really did. So
that
like,
is, wow.
Because I'm sitting here and I'm like, she's in so much trouble on that try, but they're not going to lose this week. So put her there. It's a great move.
You and I are mind melding.
It's really weird, man. Yeah. It's really weird. So, Alexa, you're off the podcast. Lex, I'll see you again
I'm
on
out.
Wednesday night.
Yeah, it's been a great
Wednesday
run.
Night, 6 p.m. Pacific, if you can do that. We'll be
our
here.
Names are Alexa and my our names are almost the same. So you can just call me Alexa.
I don't even have to change it. That's it. It's like Survivor Specialist Phil and Lex. You just drop the A's. It's no big deal. Good. Alexa, who are you gonna go with? I see who you're gonna go with, but why don't
yeah,
you
I put it in the Google
else?
Doc.
Russell Hance is in the chat. Don't forget that.
Yes, hi Russell Hance.
Hi Russell.
Hi, Russell. Thanks for coming. I know we haven't met.
How's it hanging, brother?
Russell has suggested a lot of people, if that's what he's talking about, going with Boston Rob. Because I'm playing with fire.
Yeah, that is playing with fire.
Yeah, I am like dipping my toe directly into the fire.
I love it.
I think he has a great chance of going home, but I didn't see this preview, but it sounds like Amber might find something, in which case he's fine.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. Exactly.
So I'm really putting a lot of faith in you guys.
Lex, before we let you go, who do you actually think is going to end up winning this season? Like, if you had to go, because you know we have all these people who are going to come on throughout the season. As it goes on, they're going to be able to make a lot more educated decisions here.
I know, but
you've watched three people get voted out.
Yeah, but I mean, you guys know that it's spitting in the wind. You know, to try to. I mean, we are still so early in this season. There is so much more game to be played. There are so many days. I mean, I could throw a guess out. If I was to guess and try to actually hit the mark, I don't think I can do that this early. So I'm just gonna go with my boy Ethan because I'd love to see him win.
Yeah.
You know, but I don't think I can't even pretend to be so smart that I've got an inkling about who's gonna go all the way and win the whole thing.
And I think that says a lot about, even though there's obviously winners with bigger personalities than others, I think what we've seen so far is that we're getting a fair share of pretty much everybody. And I feel like, man, like you got to kind of throw out everything you know about how it's edited and everything that happens, because you're just like, you know, maybe they just really wanted to give Yule his time to shine. Maybe they just thought Sophie was giving great content this time. I mean, Sophie's going to pass her confessional count in like episode 5 from her entire South Pacific season. It's absurd. I mean, she had 25 confessionals in all of South Pacific. I think she already has 8 in this season. And it's just, it's crazy. So
it's crazy.
You know, when I look at this, it's so hard to predict, but that's what's so cool about this season right now is that there's so many people, and you're not sitting here going, man, I'm really being hit over the head with somebody. I mean, Adam has the most confessionals, everybody not voted out. I'm not sitting here going, well, Adam's got this in the bag. There's no way Adam's got this in the bag this early. So
no.
I think that's a really cool thing. And I think, you know, it's going to be a fun season.
It has been a really, really fun season already to watch.
I'm loving it so much.
Yeah.
Me too.
Even with all the craziness.
I did not think I was going to love it as much as I do, but I really, really do. So
at the end of the day, you have Edge of Extinction, you have the fire tokens, you have a lot going on, but I think it comes down to, we know these characters. We love all of them. And even if you hate them, you love to hate them.
Yep.
And it just makes for compelling TV every time. Yeah. It's like, what's going to come out of these crazy people's
mouths? And they're playing hardcore. Most of them are playing hardcore, which gets my motor going for sure.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. Well, Lex, we loved having you on. This is the second time we were able
so
to do
great.
It. We got to make
thank you guys so much for having me. It's always such a fun time. You guys are lovely and delightful, and it's always just fun to shoot the Survivor
Yeah, we got to make this like a staple.
I mean, you can kind of just come in and out because it sounds like we all agree with each other all the time and no one would notice.
Yeah, exactly. Just put on a red wig or get your hair a little bit longer and we'll be good to go. Whichever one you're filling in for, it doesn't matter. But no, this was awesome.
Yeah, you guys, thanks again for having me. I appreciate it. And it was a good time. And I'll talk to you guys next time. Enjoy the season.
See you soon, Lex. This is great.
Bye, guys.
Bye.
Sick of procurement bottlenecks? Get the cure with Bill Procurement. Bill is the all-in-one platform trusted by nearly 500,000 businesses to simplify their financial operations. And now they've introduced Bill Procurement, which pairs seamlessly with accounts payable to automate procure-to-pay workflows in one place. Every step, from submitting a purchase request to reconciling payment, happens in Bill Procurement, so your business keeps moving and growing. Score $200 when you see Bill Procurement in action with a demo. Go to bill.com/procurement200. Bill.com/procurement200.